Chapter 3 Vision Quest. Back on the campus of our alma mater, only the tangy aroma of toner kept me awake as I searched their entire catalog of job listings for English and counseling majors. Out of all the offerings, only one position held any attraction at all. I circled it and took the booklet home to Louise so she could follow up and get me an application. It was for a teaching post in a Mission Elementary School on the Navajo Reservation in northeastern Arizona. An organization called Navajo Gospel Mission was offering to pay one half of our support if we would come and teach Navajo fourth and fifth graders. We had no idea what they meant by half support, but half of something was certainly better than all of nothing. When I returned home from work the next day, Louise was buzzing with excitement. She had called the number listed and spoken with a board member of the mission who lived in our county. He had told her that while teachers were a need, the biggest need was for dorm parents for the boarding school boys. He thought we sounded perfect for that position and had the mission director in Flagstaff, Arizona, call Louise immediately. Tom Dolligan was an Irishman whose caring and love came right through the phone lines with his brogue. Tom was so excited about our joining the mission that his enthusiasm spread to Louise. The two of them had practically sealed the deal before Louise remembered she ought to involve me. This was what I walked in on. I was on the phone to Tom within a couple of minutes of arriving home. It didn't take long for me to join in the general euphoria. We were going to be missionaries. It turned out Navajo Gospel Mission was a faith mission, which meant all workers had to raise their own finances through family, friends, and churches. Because of the Navajo Gospel Academy's urgent need for staff and the short time available for support development before school started in less than 4 months, we were guaranteed at least one half of the mandated support amounts by the board, no matter how much came in for us each month. We got the blessing of our church, the Los Osos Vineyard Christian Fellowship, and visited three small groups to share the vision for the Navajo, sent off a prayer letter to everyone we could think of. About a month and a half after I circled that listing, we were in Hard Rock, Arizona, in the middle of the Navajo homeland for Indian missionary candidate training. We and a group of other new missionaries studied Navajo language and culture, the history and strategy of Navajo Gospel Mission, and spent a weekend living in a Navajo camp with a family, herding sheep and hanging out. We loved it. We also fell in love with the other young missionaries we were training alongside. Some were headed for other postings among the Navajo, but several families were targeting completely different tribes, like the Hupa of Northern California and the Tarahumara of Mexico. We met one really unusual family. Rick and Laura Leatherwood and their three boys were training to work with the Navajo, but all Rick could talk about was Mongolia. He explained God was calling them to the Mongolian people, but Mongolia was completely closed to missionary activity. Even short visits were impossible. Rick and Laura believed God was going to open Mongolia to the gospel, and they wanted to be ready. So Rick studied the cultures of the world and had determined the Navajo were as close to Mongolians as he could get. Both semi-nomadic nations herded sheep, rode horses, and ate the same food prepared the same way. They even lived in strangely similar round homes, the wood and mud Navajo hogan and the felt-covered Mongolian ger. The strong cultural connection was explained by the fact that the Navajo were among the last to come over the land bridge from Mongolia and Asia to the American continent. The Leatherwood family would live with and work among Navajos to prepare to penetrate Mongolia. Louise and I were puzzled and fascinated at the same time. God was planting a seed in our hearts that would take 5 years to bear fruit. About a month later, in August 1987, we three Hogans moved into the boys' dorm at Hard Rock Station and prepared to adopt 10 Navajo boys ranging in age from 5 to 11. We would have these boys from Sunday evening through Friday afternoon, 20 hours every day. The only time we were off duty was when all the boys were in class and at mealtimes when they were in the cafeteria. It was tiring, but very rewarding. We had a ball playing with and training these children. Every evening we shared devotions with them and tucked each one into bed. The youngest students were not used to speaking English. Sleeping in beds, taking showers, or even spending much time indoors. Everything was a learning experience. After school, we'd explore the rocky hills and colorful canyons, play capture the flag with the girls' dorm, and talk about Jesus. When the boys were in class in the mornings, Louise, Melody, and I would visit their families and their encampments scattered all over the region. We were thrilled as relationships with these other young parents slowly began to form. The mission had been operating under a mission station strategy in which the Navajo were expected to come to the mission station for ministry, both practical and spiritual. The school was one device to influence these people. To our fresh point of view, this didn't seem to be working very well. The mission was not impacting many of the families in our area, not even those of our students. We felt we needed to go out and become a part of their world, not wait for them to join ours. Our strategy was very successful with the Navajo, and they began to invite us off the compound and into their camps. This caused problems for us with the older missionaries, and everyone was older. There was no one our age on staff. Most were our parents' age or older. We were bucking tradition and the status quo in a big way. Dorm parents had never ministered off the compound before. In fact, the 4 kid-free hours we had each weekday were not considered time off. It had always been used for working in maintenance, a task for which I am particularly unsuited. At any rate, we perceived that envy was at the root of the problems we were causing. Everyone working out there had originally wanted deep and satisfying relationships with Navajos, but the methodology of the mission station had ensured those desired friendships would not happen. Now these first-term kids were being accepted by the locals in a way no one else really had been. Our popularity with our co-workers decreased in direct relation to our acceptance by the Navajo families. It got to the point that we were always in trouble, and it didn't seem right to involve our Navajo friends. The only people we could talk to were 2 missionary couples, Tom and Teresa Elkins, and Mike and Cora Hendricks, who lived 20 dirt road miles or so away from Hard Rock. Tom and Teresa were with another mission and lived in the middle of nowhere with a Navajo family. They were our heroes and our friends. Mike and Cora ran the Navajo Gospel Mission Station in Pinon, Arizona. Motto, where the pavement ends and the Wild West begins. And were among the only non-Navajo in town. They were our only safe sounding board. Together, these 2 families kept us sane. We met with Tom Dolligan at the end of our first school year. Linda, our direct supervisor in Hard Rock, was sympathetic and supportive of us and had made Tom aware of what a hard time we were having with the other missionaries. His suggestion was for us to go home for the summer to raise support. Actually, our support level was strong at 90% to 100% every month. This was a miracle since we hadn't done much at all to raise support. Most of the staff at Hard Rock lived on less than half their required support levels. We would also need to decide whether we wanted to complete the rest of our 2-year commitment. Tom told us he was praying we would return in September, but he would understand if we didn't. We spent the summer speaking to groups and counseling with our pastor in Los Osos. He told us he could not think of any reason why we would want to go back. But it wasn't that simple for Louise and me. We missed our boys and Navajo friends deeply, and we really loved the work, but it was hard to see how relationships with our fellow missionaries were going to improve. We kept calling out to God to show us what to do. Finally, He spoke to us very clearly. The Father told us we would never learn real commitment in the local church, where we had the luxury of relating with only those we chose and with whom connecting was easy. We needed to go back and make the difficult relationships work, regardless of how painful that might be. So we did.